hospitality, and retail trade industries. According to federal data, West Virginia had around 30,000 unemployed residents in 2024. Carter adds second chance hiring also has community benefits, as the vast majority of individuals currently incarcerated will eventually be released back into society.
Employment is one thing that studies repeatedly show promotes economic inclusion, but also reduces recidivism and strengthens families and neighborhoods.
According to the Vera Institute of Justice, people are less likely to reoffend and land back behind bars if they are able to maintain employment. This is Nadia Romlagan for West Virginia News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 5th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Carmel Pierre-Louise, Mel Gertoff, and Lizard. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonio Gonzalez, Eric Tegethoff, Nadia Romlagan, and Simone Perez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Hi, this is Carmel with KBOO News. Coming up in January, the group Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest is putting on a series of dance workshops that are open to the public. They will be hosting a series of dance workshops that are open to the public. They'll be hosted at Las Arioletas on Northeast Killingsworth here in Portland. I spoke with the instructor, Tony Carnell, to learn more.
I am Tony Carnell. I'm one of the project dancers and performing artists for Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest.
So you're hosting a series of movement workshops in January at Las Arioletas in Portland. What can you tell me about this workshop?
Yeah, we're super excited to be back at Las Arioletas. We started there a couple years ago. That little area of Portland is so full of incredible people and incredible things. Heidi Duckler found it just kind of by accident one time, and it has been the most beautiful kind of like relationship. It's Las Arioletas is an income-based housing property, and they have a venue in the bottom of their apartment building that's just this incredible space. We actually created a dance film in their space. It's kind of like this big open area with like a kitchen. It's like meant for hosting, and we had this opportunity to go in there and create a film, and that kind of created this really beautiful relationship with the residents of Las Arioletas. And then across the street is the community transitional school, which is also really, really amazing. Low-income students who are just like the most incredible kids you have ever met, and incredibly talented. They're incredible dancers. They're smart. And we just have built the most amazing relationship. So this whole connection is bringing the arts in different ways to that community.
What is your dance background?
Yeah, my dance background is vast. I started back in 2009. I got a full tuition scholarship to attend a ballet training program in my hometown, Boise, Idaho. And I went to this ballet school. I didn't think I would go back. And I enjoyed it. It was fun for the first couple of weeks, but it was an outreach program. And when it ended, I got a full tuition scholarship to do it again. So I actually got to go train at a ballet school for an entire year. And then I kept going back and I kept getting scholarships. And that's really what kicked off my dance career, was this nonprofit coming into my elementary school and teaching free dance classes, which is what we're doing at Las Adelitas.
Is this your first time teaching a movement workshop like this?
No, I've been teaching in dance in general, but movement workshops and big master classes for several years now. I started my own dance company, masterclass brand called TCM, Tony Carnell Masterclass, a couple of years ago, where I was traveling to competitive dance studios and teaching these really, really big workshops to dance students. And I teach a ton here in the community all over. I teach for Heidi Duckler, but I also teach for Open Space, which is located in Kenton. They're incredible. And just all over Portland, I have this amazing list of places that I get to connect with and teach.
How would you prepare for this dancing experience for someone that's aspiring to be a dancer?
Well, I think the biggest thing is sometimes when people hear dance, they immediately are like, well, I'm not a dancer. I can't take a dance class. I really want to move people away from that idea. I teach really, really hard dance classes, but I also can teach class for everyone. So even if you have never taken a dance class or a movement class of any kind, I still want you in my class because there's still something that we can work with. I kind of have this saying of like, everybody is a mover. Anyone can find rhythm with guidance. And that is what is so incredible. So this class, there's really nothing to get ready for. Bring yourself, bring comfortable clothes to be in, come with an open mind. This class is not just geared for teenagers and kids. It's geared for everyone, your mom, your grandma, your dad. Like, this is really like an opportunity to put yourself in a new environment and come move.
There's going to be a community showcase at the end of the month. What is that going to look like?
So the community showcase we've done a couple of times now at the end of our series. For each different thing, we had a music workshop, we've had a big painting workshop that we've also done, and we've had so many people come in and work with the community. And at the end, we do this like showcase, which is just family and friends and community. We do some really, really good food that we bring in from local vendors, and we just get to present whatever the work was that we got to work on for the month. So mine will be a little dance showcase. So anything that we created in my workshop for the 4 weeks, we'll get to kind of put together a little show just for our family and friends. Yeah, it's just a good time to kind of get together and show what we've been working on.
If our listeners are wanting to learn more, how can they do that?
They can always check us out on social media. We love to send people towards our social media. Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest, which is our Instagram. Heidi Duckler Dance is actually in two places, here in Portland and in LA. So there's two versions of Heidi Duckler Dance. They can do Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest on Instagram. They can do Heidi Duckler Dance LA, which is also another option to find lots more info about Heidi Duckler Dance and what she's doing in general. And then they can also check out my social media, where I always have things listed too, at The Real Tony C, which is on Instagram. So Heidi Duckler Dance, we get to do all these incredible projects, create films, kind of work in the community, and do a variety of different things. We're a site-based production company, so we do dance shows and art creations and so many different things all over the city of Portland. We love to dance at the Keller Fountain. It's like one of our most favorite places to dance. And so we're always putting on these really big events, but we can't do it without funding. We've got some incredible people helping us make these things happen. All these shows that we get to put on each year are brought to us by some really amazing people. The MAP Fund is one of the organizations that that is connected to us, and they're so great. We're so like grateful for that relationship. The MAP Fund is funding this Garden of Doors, which is at Los Adelitas. This whole project has been funded by them. They work with people all over the United States. So it's not even just Portland. We're so proud to like be on this huge spectrum of people, and to be on their radar is super cool. The Oregon Arts Commission, there's just so many people that are involved in the creation of art here in the Portland community. And I'm just so grateful. We're so grateful as an organization to be connected to these people. They're just so wonderful. So the class will be a fusion between contemporary and jazz. I like to call it jazz funk. We think it's kind of a little bit of like hip hop, kind of a little bit of contemporary, meaning there's lots of carving and lots of like softer movements. And then, you know, you've got your good old school jazz kind of energy in there. So it'll be kind of a mixture of things. Everybody loves it kind of thing. So I'm excited to get to share it.
What has inspired your current choreography?
Years ago, I got signed to a talent agency in Los Angeles. And when you get signed to a dance agency out there, you have to kind of be fluent in all styles. But one of the main styles that you see when you watch TV, like award shows or things like that, what dancers are doing is either hip hop or a mixture, which is the jazz funk. So I've always been inspired by that kind of movement, anything that's commercial based. So think when you watch a commercial on TV for jeans or whatever, and you see people dancing, that's the kind of movement that I like to create. So that's kind of the vibe that we'll go for. Yeah, I'm excited. It's been a world that I've been playing in for a little while now. I got really excited about the kind of jazz funk commercial world after going to some dance conventions, and they kind of changed and altered my brain chemistry a little bit when it came to dance, and I'm super excited about all of them, and so I just kind of took on that same kind of energy. So yeah, it's really exciting. It's a very cool energy in those classes. People coming to this workshop, I really want it to feel like a safe place for people to kind of explore. It's not, we'll have cameras out, and that's kind of makes people panic, but I want to give people the opportunity to kind of be themselves and stand in who they are, and so my class is also really, really rooted in like confidence. So if you're a, you know, 8-year-old coming to take my class, if you're, you know, a 40-year-old that's coming to take my class, my job is to help you feel confident in whatever stage of dance that you're in, and then build from there. So I think it's really, really geared for everybody, but I really want people to know that the class is a safe place for you to just expand and explore and have a good time.
That was Tony Carnell with Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest talking to me about the upcoming workshop. More information about the movement workshop is online at bit.ly/movement-workshops. For KBOO News, I am Carmel Pierre-Louis.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. The re-election of Donald J. Trump is clearly the most notable event of 2025. We thought we knew him and what to expect of him, but we and the world discovered that we had grossly underestimated the damage one leader could do to country and planet. We had failed to consider that he had learned a few things from his first term, such as how to avoid guardrails, how to maximize the president's power, how to undermine enemies, and how to discard legal constraints, all preordained in the Project 2025 blueprint. As Trump said in an interview with The Atlantic in June, a few months into his second term, quote, "The first time I had two things to do, run the country and survive. I had all these crooked guys, and the second time I run the country and the world." Run them into the ground, it turns out. We did not imagine that Trump would seek to overturn the constitutional order following his failed coup of January 6, 2021, that he would seek to upset the global economic order by weaponizing tariffs, that he would appoint such a large cast of unqualified, incompetent loyalists to key government posts, that he would use the Department of Justice to go after real and imagined enemies, and that he would seek to bring to heel every institution of civil society, the press, judges, universities, law firms, entertainers, just as any dictator would. Finally, we could not imagine that the leader of our country would be so lacking in common human decencies, that he would be so devoid of empathy and compassion, so focused on retribution, so single-minded in acquiring wealth for himself and his billionaire supporters, so openly racist and homophobic. The global impact of Trump's first year has been extraordinary. From immigration and the global economy to national security and alliance politics, his administration has consistently defied norms. Traditional U.S. alliances such as NATO in Europe and Japan and Korea in Asia have been reduced in importance, whereas currying favor with autocracies, especially Russia and Hungary, has risen in importance. America's openness to immigrants has been reduced to whites only. Applications for asylum have virtually stopped being processed, and immigration from 39 countries so far has stopped or been heavily restricted. ICE and Border Patrol have become a heavily armed domestic army to deal with what Trump calls the enemy within. Trump's seizure and deportation of thousands of people who were stellar members of their communities has become the new normal, a huge business unto itself, setting a model for far-right governments elsewhere. The anti-immigrant stance, as well as differences over Ukraine war policy and climate change, have put the U.S. starkly at odds with democratic Europe and in sync with far-right parties. The American example, which once touted constitutional democracy, now explicitly promotes far-right political groups that are making headway in France, Germany, Britain, and Italy. The Trump administration's latest national security strategy paper says that Europe is facing the, quote, stark prospect of civilizational erasure, whereas the growing influence of patriotic European parties, meaning the far-right nationalists, indeed gives cause for great optimism. Our goal, says the paper, should be to help Europe correct its current trajectory, to prevent a future in which certain NATO members will become majority non-European. Trump has also come out in favor of the far right in Argentina and Honduras, and Israel's far right, with Trump endorsement, has significantly undermined the rule of law and given new life to Benjamin Netanyahu's quest to continue in office. Liberal democracy, in short, is taking a beating in the Trump era. As the year ends, international violence remains high. Wars that Trump claims to have resolved go on or have reignited, such as between Thailand and Cambodia, and between the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Rwanda-based militia. Then there are the wars Trump has initiated, the attacks on Venezuelan boats on unproven allegations of drug trafficking, the naval blockade of Venezuela, and at year's end, the attacks on ISIS camps in Nigeria on unproven allegations of genocide against Christians. To be sure, Trump has pushed peace plans for Gaza and Ukraine, but Israeli attacks on Hamas continue, settler violence in the West Bank has reached unprecedented heights, Hamas has not been disarmed, and no progress has been made on Palestinian statehood. In Ukraine, Russian attacks on civilian targets have continued unabated, even as Trump has agreed to join NATO in providing Ukraine with security guarantees. Ukraine is steadily losing lives and territory, while Vladimir Putin resists a ceasefire. Despite heavy casualties and a weakened economy, Putin's Russia seems not to have taken a step back from its original aim to transform Ukraine into another Belarus. U.S. relations with China may be officially described as improving, as Trump seeks a comprehensive trade pact and Xi Jinping seeks an easing of U.S. technology export controls. But the reality is that relations remain tense and confrontational, especially over Taiwan. The trade deal Trump negotiated with Xi in Korea is also a potential problem, as China's purchases of U.S. soybeans have been less than promised, and Bloomberg reports that China's sales of rare earth magnets have not included the materials needed for the U.S. to produce the magnets itself. While Trump frets about China's trade practices, China has become the regional and global economic leader, preaching the virtues of globalization among developing countries while criticizing Trump's protectionist policies. By November, China had broken its own trade record with a $1 trillion trade surplus, despite a significant decline in U.S. trade with China. The attempt to bully China with high tariffs was part of a foolhardy, self-defeating strategy aimed, or so Trump said, at bringing U.S. manufacturing back home and luring more foreign investment. With a few exceptions, such as Taiwan's semiconductor industry, the strategy hasn't worked. The main effect of the tariffs has been to force U.S. corporations to increase consumer prices, leading to inflation, job losses, the affordability issue for all but the wealthy, and a big political headache for Trump. China's ability to outlast Trump's tariff war is just one indicator that the taco phenomenon, Trump always chickens out, is real. The Greenlanders, Canadians, Ukrainians, and Indians are among those governments and peoples who have resisted Trump's blandishments. Since he can't fire them, he retreats and seeks retribution via high tariffs on Canadian and Indian imports, spying and takeover threats in the case of Greenland. But while their resistance shows that Trump's money can't always buy favor, he remains the ultimate wheeler dealer. The line between public and private business has evaporated under Trump. He bailed out Argentina on behalf of a far-right ally of Trump and Trump's own Treasury Secretary. His cyber currency transactions, his business dealings with Middle East potentates, the gifts illegally accepted from foreign governments, and his real estate and energy deals with Russia at the same time that his envoys are supposedly pursuing an end to the Ukraine war, all show that there has never been a more corrupt, self-interested administration in the modern history of the United States. Writing for The New Yorker magazine, John Cassidy tallies the Trump take from crypto sales and non-crypto profits, $1.8 billion since he was reelected, and going back to 2016, $3.4 billion altogether. On the environmental front, the news is not good. On the 10th anniversary of the Paris Accords, many countries have long given up on achieving the goal of no more than a 1.5 degree centigrade increase in global warming. The latest international climate change conference, COP30, fell short of host country Brazil's announced objective of transiting away from fossil fuels. The U.S. was not present for the first time, but lobbied for oil and gas company interests, with support from Saudi Arabia, Russia, and other oil-exporting countries. Arctic and Antarctic ice continues to melt, and other signs of impending catastrophe, drought, hurricanes, flooding, biodiversity loss, coral sea reef construction, loom ever more prominent. The Trump administration has made a great leap backward on the environment, discarding major environmental protection regulations, gutting wind and solar projects, and providing additional incentives to the oil and gas industry. The very words climate change have been whitewashed from government publications and websites. Environmental research and the scientists who do it have been marginalized. The good news is that wind and solar power are rapidly gaining adoption around the world, most notably in China, as the economics argue in their favor. As 2025 ends, we see defiance of international law in many places. Besides instigating a war with Venezuela that seems increasingly to be all about oil, Trump's mass deportations abroad make him complicitous in torture and other depravities. Israel continues to violate human rights in Gaza and the West Bank, and Russia is bombarding Ukraine and paying nothing for its aggression. In the White House sits a mentally unstable man who spends more time on ego-inflating projects such as constructing a $400 million ballroom and putting his name on public institutions such as the Kennedy Center and the U.S. Institute of Peace than he does on governing. The magazine Salon puts it well, quote, "The ballroom whole thing is a too perfect symbol of Trump's second administration. They are very good at breaking things, but they don't know how to create anything of value." There's little reason to celebrate the state of the planet, and all the more reason to celebrate family, friends, and community. Wishing everyone good health, safety, and a strong spirit of resistance in the new year. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
Revenge scorn? Trump cancels a water pipeline in Colorado. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last week, President Trump exercised the first veto of his second term by canceling a clean water project in Colorado that had been approved unanimously by the House and the Senate.
The project is already under construction, and the legislation would have eased the repayment terms for the communities that will use it.
The development includes a 130-mile pipeline to provide clean water for municipal and industrial uses, serving about 50,000 people in the southeastern part of Colorado, located in congressional districts that voted heavily for Trump.
Many communities in the area have been waiting for the project for decades because they've been relying on groundwater that can contain salt, radium, and uranium, which require expensive treatment or alternatives like bottled water.
In his veto message to Congress, Trump said that he was committed to saving American taxpayers from expensive and unreliable policies and ending handouts. However, the Congressional Budget Office estimated that the project would have an effect on direct spending of less than $500,000.
Trump then signaled that his veto may have been about politics. In a social media post, he referred to Colorado's Governor Jared Polis as a scumbag and wished that he and the prosecutor who brought a criminal case against the former county clerk Tina Peters would rot in hell. The governor has refused to release Peters from prison, who was convicted for allowing unauthorized access to state voting machines.
The water project legislation was sponsored by Colorado Republican Congress member Lauren Boebert, who represents a district where a major part of the pipeline is situated. She said that the effort to keep the project going was not over.
Boebert added that she hoped the veto had nothing to do with political retaliation for demanding accountability in an apparent reference to the release of the Epstein files. Trump had unsuccessfully pressured Boebert to vote against the release last November.
Now, an ode to clouds. These collections of water and ice float above us, and on any given day, we barely give them much thought. Yet they have a weighty influence on making Earth a habitable place, providing us with fresh water, shading us from the sun, and regulating global climate.
New research suggests that we might want to give clouds their due. In a paper presented at a meeting of the American Geophysical Union last month, George Saloudis, a climate scientist at NASA, said that the world's reflective cloud cover has shrunk in the past two decades, allowing in more light and boosting global warming.
In his research based on 35 years of satellite data, Saloudis found that subtropical zones where fewer clouds occur have expanded. This is worrisome because in these areas close to the equator, it will allow more solar energy to hit the Earth's surface year-round.
In contrast, Earth's cloudiest zones over the oceans, which typically cool the planet, have shifted toward the poles and shrunk, allowing more of the sun's energy to reach and warm the seas.
Because of increased human-caused greenhouse gases, Earth has a growing energy imbalance, where the planet is absorbing more solar radiation than it reflects back into space.
These new findings suggest that the loss of reflective oceanic storm clouds is a significant driver of that imbalance. Climate scientists like Saloudis will next investigate whether greenhouse gases have caused cloud coverage to change and if we should expect the trend to continue. And finally, we think of evolution as a slow, lumbering process of changes in traits across generations. But don't tell that to a group of sparrows living on the UCLA campus in Southern California.
A new study has found that offspring of dark-eyed juncos, a type of sparrow, developed longer bills during the COVID-19 pandemic when lockdowns were imposed.
Juncos have historically lived in mountain forests near Southern California, but because of climate change and habitat loss, many birds moved into urban areas, such as around UCLA in the early 2000s.
Juncos in the wild have long bills to help them dig and forage for bugs and seeds, but the urban birds developed short, stubby beaks because that's all they needed to pick up food scraps, crumbs, and other morsels left by people.
How quickly could they evolve their anatomy? Now we know. Researchers at UCLA say that when everyone went into lockdown during the pandemic, the easy snacks left by students and staff disappeared. So the urban birds were forced to forage in shrubbery and grasses like their cousins in the mountains do.
In an example of survival of the fittest, the juncos that still had slightly longer bills got more bugs and seeds and were able to survive and have babies. The team says that during the 2 years of reduced human activity during COVID, juncos were born with longer beaks.
Remarkably, that adaptation didn't last. Once campus life went back to normal, the bills in youngsters returned to the previous shorter shape, underscoring the effect that humans can have on wildlife.
Given that an estimated 3 billion birds have vanished over the past 50 years, of which about 6% are juncos, this evolutionary versatility offers hope for their survival.
That's it for this week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Listen to Armando Puentes every Sunday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., playing the best.